Welcome back, everyone, to the Utica Phoenix Deep Dive.
Yes.
Where we take a deep dive into sources that you send us and kind of pick them apart and try to give you the most important takeaways and nuggets of knowledge.
Right.
So today we're looking at the case of Ralph Jarl.
Okay.
You sent us a good mix of sources for this one. We have CNN.
Mm-hmm.
We have the New York Times. We have the Independent. And we have Yahoo News.
Okay.
And they all kind of give different perspectives on this case and its outcome.
Right.
So we're going to explore what happened,
mm-hmm.
the legal arguments, the role that race played.
Right.
And really just kind of pick apart this whole situation.
Yeah. This is one that really, I think, captivated a lot of people's attention back in 2023.
Yes.
And it's something that I think continues to spark a lot of important conversations.
Yes.
About race and justice and, you know, the use of force in America.
Absolutely. So to set the scene, it's April 13th, 2023.
Okay.
16-year-old Ralph Jarl is going to pick up his younger siblings.
But he accidentally rings the doorbell of 84-year-old Andrew Lester's house.
And that's where things kind of take this very tragic turn.
Yes.
You know, according to the articles that you've provided.
Right.
Lester opens the door and shoots Jarl twice.
Oh, wow.
Once in the head and once in the arm.
Wow.
And Jarl actually later testified that he didn't even interact with Lester.
Oh, my gosh.
Before he was shot, he just rang the doorbell and was waiting there.
Yeah, and you included this one piece from The Independent where Jarl's aunt describes him as this quiet, gentle soul who loves music.
Yeah.
It's so heartbreaking to think about what he went through.
Right.
You know, not just physically, but also emotionally and psychologically.
Absolutely. And I think it really highlights the human cost of these kinds of incidents, and the fact that the trauma can be so long-lasting,
yes,
and so far-reaching. You know, it affects not only the victim, mm-hmm. but also their families and communities.
Absolutely. It's important to note that he actually did survive this.
Right.
He graduated high school.
Yeah.
He's going to college at Texas A&M University.
Yeah. He's playing in the marching band.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the articles from CNN points out that his journey is ongoing.
Right.
And those emotional scars are very real.
Right. And that kind of makes you wonder, you know,
mm-hmm.
what a just outcome would even look like in a case like this.
Yeah.
You know, what would it mean to address the harm?
Yes.
And to really prevent these kind of things from happening again.
Yes. Let's get into the legal proceedings now.
Okay.
So Lester was charged with first degree assault and armed criminal action.
Okay.
So to break that down for you,
yeah.
First degree assault generally involves serious physical injury
right.
that's inflicted intentionally and knowingly.
Right.
And then armed criminal action adds the element of using a weapon in a felony.
Okay.
So these are very serious charges.
Yes.
With some potentially severe penalties.
Absolutely. And initially, Lester pleaded not guilty.
Okay.
His lawyer arguing self-defense.
Okay.
And they claim that Lester was scared to death because of Jarl's size.
Okay.
And that he believed that someone was trying to break into his house.
I see.
So, you know, this defense strategy really, I think, points to a bigger issue.
Right.
You know, this perception of black men as threatening,
mm-hmm.
even when they're unarmed and posing no danger.
Yeah. And that's a point that a lot of the articles bring up.
Right.
Including one from the New York Times,
uh-huh.
which talks about the history of this fear
yeah.
and how it continues to shape perception and actions.
Right.
Sometimes with very tragic consequences.
And it makes you think about the self-defense laws
yeah.
and how complex they are.
Right.
You know, on the one hand, individuals have a right to protect themselves from harm.
Right.
But then on the other hand,
yeah.
you have to consider when deadly force is actually justified
mm-hmm.
and whether implicit bias plays a role, you know, in these very, very split second decisions.
Yes. And you actually included an article from Yahoo News
yeah.
that highlights how the prosecutor acknowledged a racial component to the case.
Yes.
So it really makes you wonder.
Right.
Even if Lester wasn't consciously motivated by race.
Yeah.
Could societal biases have affected how he saw Jarl,
right.
you know, as a threat?
Absolutely. Implicit bias is a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's these unconscious attitudes and stereotypes that we have about different groups of people.
Right.
And they can impact our behavior without us even realizing it.
Yes.
And this case is a very good example of that.
Yes. The trial was actually delayed.
Right.
Due to Lester's declining health.
Yeah.
But on February 14th, 2025.
Okay.
Just last week.
Yes.
Lester pleaded guilty to a lesser charge of second-degree assault.
Okay.
So this means he admitted to intentionally causing serious injury,
mm-hmm.
but without the element of deliberation or premeditation that uh-huh. you see in first-degree assault.
Mm-hmm. So how does this plea deal affect his sentence?
So this plea deal really impacts his sentence.
Okay.
So instead of a possible life sentence,
right.
he now faces a maximum of 7 years.
Wow.
The prosecution is looking for a 5-year prison term.
Okay.
But Lester can request a lesser sentence.
I see.
And the articles also highlight the Jarl family's reaction to this plea deal.
Yeah.
Which was just disappointment and frustration.
Yeah, right.
They believe it doesn't fully address the severity of the crime.
Yeah.
Or the issue of racial bias that they feel is so central to the case.
It makes you wonder about the effectiveness
yeah.
of our legal system in addressing racial injustice.
Right.
You know, does this plea deal truly serve justice?
Yeah.
Or is this a compromise that fails to really address these underlying issues?
It's true.
Of bias
yeah.
and the use of force.
This case really, I feel like, shines this light.
It does.
On the challenges of navigating a legal system
yeah.
that at times feels so impersonal and detached from the experience of those impacted by it.
You know, and it makes you think, what would a just outcome even look like
right.
in a case like this?
Yeah.
And that's something we're going to continue to explore as we kind of dig deeper into this.
Yeah.
One of the articles you sent from CNN really stuck with me.
Okay.
It talks about how this case and the plea deal in particular sparked this debate about stand your ground laws.
Okay.
You know, they exist in a lot of states.
Right.
Including Missouri, where this all happened.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Can you explain those laws a little bit?
Yeah. So stand your ground laws.
Okay.
They basically remove the duty to retreat
Ooh.
In situations where someone feels threatened.
Okay.
So if you think you're in danger,
mm-hmm.
you're not legally required to try to escape or de-escalate.
I see.
Before using force.
Okay.
Even deadly force.
So even though Lester's lawyer didn't explicitly say stand your ground.
Right.
The fact that that law exists there. Could have contributed to this idea that his actions were okay.
Exactly. And, you know, it really kind of brings us back to this complex
mm-hmm.
relationship between legal frameworks and societal biases.
Yeah.
You know, these laws, while they're intended to protect people, well, can be applied in ways
yeah.
that really reflect these inequalities.
It makes you think about how these laws, self-defense in general,
right.
are understood and applied so differently.
Yeah.
Based on race.
Absolutely. And there's been research done on implicit bias.
Okay.
And how it affects how juries view things.
Uh-huh.
You know, the credibility of witnesses or the reasonableness of someone's fear.
Yeah.
And this can lead to disparities, you know, where white defendants are more likely to be acquitted in self-defense cases than black defendants.
Right. Well,
even in very similar circumstances.
It's a reminder that justice isn't always blind.
It's not.
And these biases can really impact people's lives.
Absolutely. And this case also makes us think about the limits of the legal system.
Right.
You know, even when someone pleads guilty, like in this case,
mm-hmm.
does that mean justice has really been served?
Right.
Or that the bigger problems have been solved?
Yeah, it feels incomplete.
It does.
Like it's a legal resolution, but not a social or moral one.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It speaks to this need for solutions that go beyond the courtroom.
Okay.
You know, things that address the root causes of racial bias.
Right.
Promote empathy and understanding and,
yeah.
you know, help create a world where everyone feels safe.
Absolutely. And you included an article from The Independent
uh-huh.
that quotes Jarl's family.
Right.
And they're so committed to using this experience to push for change.
Yeah.
To make sure this doesn't happen again.
It's inspiring.
It is.
And it reminds us that everyone has a role to play
mm-hmm.
in making society more just and fair,
mm-hmm.
whether it's through education or advocacy,
right.
or even just having open conversations about these issues.
Yeah, you know, shifting gears a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier
yeah.
about the impact on Jarl's life.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like a remarkable young man.
He is.
You know, succeeding in school
mm-hmm.
and doing the things that he loves.
Right.
Despite what he's gone through.
Yeah. His story is really incredible.
Yeah.
You know, talk about resilience.
Mm-hmm.
He's 18 now.
Yeah.
He's at Texas A&M. He's
yeah.
playing in the marching band.
Mm-hmm.
There's this photo in the Otter News article of him in his band uniform.
Wow.
And he's just beaming.
It's amazing.
You know, it's hard to believe that this is the same young man
mm-hmm.
who was shot just 2 years ago.
It's a reminder that even after something so terrible,
yeah,
there's still hope.
Absolutely.
You know, the possibility for healing and growth.
Right. But it also makes you think about what kind of support exists for victims.
Right.
You know, how do we make sure they have the resources they need to heal, both physically and emotionally?
Absolutely. One of the articles, I think it was from CNN, mentions that he's been going to counseling.
Okay.
And that his family has been a huge support system.
Right.
But it also points out that access to those services isn't always easy.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who face barriers to getting help.
That's true. And it really highlights the need for more investment in mental health.
Yes.
Especially for communities that are affected by violence.
Yeah. You know, this story has so many layers to it.
It does.
It's the individual tragedy, the legal fight.
Yeah.
The bigger societal implications.
Yeah.
And then this long road to healing.
It's a story that's still unfolding, and it makes us ask these tough questions and work towards a better future.
You know, as we dig deeper into all of this, I think it's important to talk about democracy.
Okay.
And how this case reflects on its strengths and weaknesses.
That's a really interesting connection.
Yeah.
You know, a big part of democracy is this idea of equal protection under the law. And this case, with all the issues of racial bias and the uneven application of justice,
it
really makes us think about if our democratic ideals are actually happening.
It does make you wonder if our systems are serving everyone equally.
Right.
Or if they're perpetuating these inequalities that undermine our democracy.
And this really underlines how important civic engagement is.
Yes.
You know, a healthy democracy needs people to participate, to stay informed, hold leaders accountable, push for change, and demand that our institutions actually uphold justice and equality.
It's a call to action for all of us.
It is.
To engage in these conversations and work towards a more just and equitable society.
Yeah.
You know, as we wrap up this deep dive, I keep coming back to that question of what a truly just outcome would have looked like in this case. I'm sure it's something that you, the listener, have thought about, too, as you were reading through all these articles.
It's a question that makes us go beyond the legal part of it.
Right.
You know, what would it mean to address not just the crime itself, but also the racial bias and the uneven application of justice?
Right. How do we reconcile the plea deal?
Yeah.
Which some people think is too lenient.
Right.
With this need for healing and accountability and change.
I think a big part of it is acknowledging the harm.
Yes.
Not just to Ralph Jarl, but to the entire community.
Right.
You know, recognizing the fear and trauma that these incidents create.
Yes.
Especially for Black Americans, who are often seen with more suspicion.
One of the articles that you sent, I think it was from the New York Times, mentioned this idea of restorative justice.
Yes.
Which focuses on repairing the harm and rebuilding relationships.
Right.
Instead of just punishing the offender.
And it involves bringing everyone together, the victim, the offender, the community, to figure out how to address the harm and prevent future incidents.
So in this case, restorative justice could mean Lester acknowledging what he did and how it impacted Jarl and the community, maybe taking steps to educate himself about bias and possibly even doing some community service to promote understanding.
Restorative justice isn't a quick fix.
Right.
And it takes willingness from everyone.
Yeah.
But it's a more holistic way of looking at justice. Mm-hmm. It considers the complexities.
Yeah.
And it aims to create a society that's more equitable.
And this case.
Yeah.
With everything going on with it.
Right.
Really shows the challenges we have as a country.
It does.
You know, it makes us face these uncomfortable truths about race and bias and the use of force.
And it forces us to work towards solutions for justice and healing and equality.
And in a democracy, we have to keep striving for those ideals.
Absolutely. Cases like this, they can be catalysts for change.
Right.
You know, they get people talking.
Yeah.
They mobilize communities.
And they push us to demand more from our leaders.
So as you're listening to this and thinking about what we've discussed, we encourage you to consider what actions you can take to make society more just.
Whether it's educating yourself or having those difficult conversations or supporting organizations or advocating for change.
Every little bit helps.
It really does. Building a better future is something we all have to do together.
Absolutely.
It takes empathy, understanding, and a willingness to challenge our own biases.
Yes. And by working together, we can create a world where things like this happen less.
Right.
A society that's truly just.
Absolutely.
And equal for everyone.
That's the goal.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into the Ralph Jarl case.
Thanks for having me.
A huge thank you to our producer, David Laguerre, for all his work.
He's the best.
And to you, our listener.
Yeah.
We'll see you back here for our next deep dive.